Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Dew Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. And a few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. When he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger? I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion and ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. And then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and has been found.'"
As we gather around the parable of the prodigal son, it's a little intimidating as a pastor to share on this. See, Charles Dickens called this the greatest story ever told. So in part, it's just ours to hear and to experience and to wonder about. And that's my hope this morning. Many people would say that this is Christianity in a nutshell. And so I want to invite us to live into it a little bit. The story beckons for that. It invites us into it to see ourselves in some of the characters. At least it does me. Some of us might come as the younger son. We are longing to break free from all the stuff that has held us back. We want to take off away from everything, maybe to Boise State or something like that. Some of us are like the younger son because we've done that and things have fallen apart. And we long to put our lives back together. I am the older son chronologically, and I am convicted by this story as well. The older son is the one that tries to be diligent and hardworking, and then fades ever so quickly into resentment and pulls away from everything. Some might come like the father. You have had someone in your life that you love that has gone away, and you long for that moment where they come back down the road so that you can welcome them. Maybe you've experienced that sense of being overjoyed as someone who you love has returned. So I want to invite us this morning just to hold that question. Where do we find ourselves in this story? With whom do we most strongly identify? We've been moving through the 40 days of Lent toward the power and the beauty and the mystery of Easter by trying our best to give up certainty and to live in the parables of Easter, of Jesus. So we lived in some of that uncertainty yesterday because the sign that we've had outside, it has been up for many, many years, and it had faded to the point where you could drive by and not necessarily tell what the sign used to say. But now it's just a blank canvas. So we live in the uncertainty of what will that look like? What will it be like as we come back here next Sunday? We hold uncertainty in so many different ways, and this morning we move into the uncertainty of this parable about the prodigal son. It's a parable that ends open, without closure. And so we've decided to use it this morning as a way to move into Holy Week together. See, the people expected Jesus to come in on a stallion. They imagined Jesus gathering an army and then crushing the Roman Empire that had occupied them. That's what they anticipated as Jesus came in, but folks all around the world are gathering with palms this morning, just like we did as we came into this space. Most of the folks are going to be reading about Jesus coming in to Jerusalem for the very last time. And the palms, or in Luke's version, it's they place cloaks on the ground. All of this signifies that Jesus is a king because that's what the people knew. They were certain about it. But Jesus came as a king not on a stallion, but on a donkey. And it wasn't even his own. He had to borrow it. This was not what the people expected. So they waved the branches. They had no idea what they were doing. They got it totally confused. And yet, the story kept luring them in. And we're going to do that just this week. We're going to move deeper and deeper into this story, into the crazy and unexpected ways of God that are made known in this parable and in the good news of our Christian story. David Lohse, who's a biblical scholar, he writes about it like this: the most important elements of life are rarely resolved, but they continue to pull us forward. That's how this parable works. It ends open. We have no idea what happens to the older son. We just know that we're left to wonder about it. And that pulls us into these characters, into the story. And our hope is that it'll pull us into Holy Week. There's a great possibility for us. We can be pulled into this story that we could become the people of that Holy Week time. On Thursday, we'll gather here in the social hall for a meal. We'll remember Jesus' Last Supper and we'll break bread together. And then on Friday, we'll come into this space and we'll have a solemn remembering of Jesus being put to death by the powers that be on the cross. And it's only through that moment, through Friday, that we ever get to the fullness of Easter. We live in a culture that doesn't really make time for that. We're already ready to be happy and to celebrate Easter. But we have to move through Friday to really live in to the depth and the promise that is God's story of resurrection on Easter morning. So this morning, as we allow ourselves to be pulled into that story, I want to turn to this really messy family that Jesus tells us about and invite us to see our own messy lives in the midst of it and to hold God's crazy love amidst all of that mess. So let's look for a little bit at the story. So in their day, like our day, inheritance is fairly simple. When my parents die, they will pass on their inheritance to their children. And they'll tithe. Dad, you're listening to this on the podcast. They'll tithe to the table at Central United Methodist Church. Got that, Dad? Spoken like an eldest son. And that's actually the kind of audacity that this younger son came to his dad with. He came to his dad and said, I'll take my inheritance now. In other words, like, you're dead to me. You as a person, you don't really matter. If you could just sell, because it's not like back in the day, all of their wealth was held in coins or at Golden One Credit Union. They had to sell off half of what they owned if he was going to give it to his younger son. So this younger son had the audacity, the boldness to come forward and say, I'll take mine now. You're dead to me. Seriously? So after saying this to his dad, and his dad does it, gives half of the inheritance to him, it says he takes off to a distant country. I would too, like, because you've just said everyone around me is dead to me, so why stick around emotionally or geographically? So he takes off. I think of it because my daughter is 4 and we live in Frozen, people. That is the story we are living in right now. This is Elsa from Disney's Frozen taking off to the ice castle. Like, I am by myself. No one is going to mess with me. This is where that younger son, my daughter would love him, has taken off to. And he's letting it go, moving on. And as often happens, when we take those steps off to rid ourselves of everything that we think has held us back, we find ourselves falling down. And that's what's happened to this young son. Everything is lost. He becomes a servant to a pig farmer. No offense, Antonio. He becomes a servant to a pig farmer. This is like the lowest of the low. Jewish folks did not eat pork. So we know that this pig farmer was not Jewish. He was a Gentile. So I'm going to go and make myself a servant, an indentured servant to the people that are not my people. That's pretty bad, but then it goes even further because he actually longs to get down next to the pigs to eat the food that they're eating just to sustain himself. This is Jesus's, like, it's over. There's nothing. If you've been following along with Downton Abbey, does anybody follow Downton Abbey? Some folks do. This is the scene when Mary and Blake, they go to save the pig late at night. Like, British aristocracy are not supposed to go and deal with the pigs. Neither is the younger son of a landed, wealthy Jewish man. That's not where you're supposed to be falling down. And that's where he finds himself, in a pig trough, thinking, if I could just get enough food to eat here like the pigs, I could put things back together. And finally, the story tells us that he comes to himself. He decides to go home. He says, how many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I'll get up and I'll go to my father and I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. And so he sets off. I want to invite us to notice just in that moment, it doesn't seem to me that this younger son is actually remorseful. It doesn't seem to me that he's repenting of everything that he's done. It actually seems like he thinks it can't get any worse. So I'm going to try to take a step up by begging for my dad to bring me back in. Not because I regret or I want to turn away from anything else, but it just can't get any worse than being amidst the pigs in a Gentile farm. It's like he hears that, it gets better, it gets better. And he tries to step up from amidst that slop and to take those steps to see if it really can. So it's uncertain, at least to me, whether he repents, but it's abundantly clear that the Father offers the warmest of embraces. See, to this Father, all means all. Come back in, no matter how bad it's been, this Father's love is full and complete. Period. So let's see what the Father does. The young son is coming back up this way, and the Father runs. It's just one word in the Greek, and we skip right past it. Like, the dad runs, because we imagine dads that like CrossFit and ultramarathon, right? But this dad was a wealthy landowner. And in that day, that's not what you do. You walk. Or actually, you wait. You wait for your younger son to come up this way. But this wealthy landed man busts out in full run when he sees his younger son walking down the street. That is undignified. That's crazy. That's not what this father is supposed to do. But it's exactly what happens in the story. See, he breaks all of these societal norms about what a dad is supposed to do, and he runs and embraces and kisses this younger son. And the younger son, he's ready. He's ready to convince his dad. Like, give me a place among your servants. I've got nothing else, but that'll be better than the nothing that I've got. And before he can finish a sentence, the dad steps on it and invites his servants, demands of his servants, let's celebrate. He's returned. We're going to slaughter the fatted calf. This is an Easter celebration. Of all Easter celebrations, like, happy reigns in this moment. As we hear and we see this father reunited with the son who had fallen face first into the slop that the pigs make their way in. And so the older brother starts to hear this. I imagine he hears the beat like we did in Does Your Heart Break? And he starts to wonder about what that is. And he walks back from the field. And he asks the servant, what's going on? Because he's the older brother. He's been working. Sun's probably gone down. He probably stayed out longer than anyone else to work. And the servant tells him, well, your brother has come back. And so we're having a celebration. And he will have none of this. None of it. He can't allow himself to take part as his family celebrates this mess of a younger son who has returned. And this is one of those moments where I feel like my life gets written into scripture at moments, where I feel like I've done all of these things, like I've been diligent, I've done all of this work, and I'm really upset with someone. I'm really upset, but I'm not going to tell them directly what's going on. I'm going to ask someone else what's going on. And then I want them to read my own face to know how upset I am. And I want them not to celebrate with everyone else, but to feel my pain. And then I want to take them over to the side and wallow in it like the pigs. Like, this is horrible, people. But I don't say anything directly. I go the passive route. It's where I tend to go when I'm at my least healthy. And I do my best to make them feel horrible. I do. That is where I go. I don't know, maybe you're in these stories too, but that's the place that I go to when I'm at my worst. And I can't allow myself to break down through all these barriers and be part of the celebration. So I need folks to pay attention to me. And the way that I do that is jabbing back. This older son, he jabs like this. He won't even acknowledge this is his brother. He says, this son of yours. I would so say that. This son of yours. See, nothing is his fault. He's extricated himself from the relationships. At this moment, he's extricating himself from being the brother. Nothing is his responsibility. Like, emotionally and psychologically, he is not going to take part in this. He wants everyone else to feel the pain that he's internalized. And the dad has this beautiful way of coming back to him and saying, this brother of yours was lost, but now is found. Like, the dad goes out. This older son is like, I'm not even going to go inside. So the dad goes out searching for him. And then the parable ends with that uncertainty. It says, to the father, the older son says, or the father says back to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found. So I think we're left in that open place of, what did the older brother do? Was he able to move through that Good Friday experience, die to the parts of himself that weren't allowing him to be in relationship so that he could be born like Easter amidst the family? Or did he stay isolated? Did he stay out in that castle? See, on this reading, we're invited to see the Father as God and to see ourselves in the messy relationship of these brothers. David Hansen writes about it like this. This God is irresponsible, hopelessly so. In the well-worn parable of the prodigal son, it seems Jesus is telling us God can't be bothered to consider the consequences of actions, God's or those of sinners. God is feckless, ridiculously so. And this is the gospel of our Lord. Yet, to our minds, God's love demonstrated in this parable seems immoral. It doesn't sit well with us. It casts aside right and wrong. There are no consequences. There are no lessons to learn. That's how Henson writes about it. But it seems to me that maybe you could say one of the lessons to learn is that God's love is summed up pretty clearly. All means all. Like, no matter what pig you find yourself next to in a trough, God's love is there. No matter how perfectly you've been working longer than anyone else out in the field, God's love is there, inviting you back into relationships. That's a crazy kind of love, and it doesn't make sense in the mess of our lives. It can feel desperately undeserved on one side and endlessly irritating on the other side. But that's how God's love seems to move in this story. As we held this, though, this week, I started to wonder with others, what if God isn't the father, though, in this story? What if that's not what this story was trying to say? What if the younger son, who made a mess of everything and then came back, what if that's God? Isn't that precisely how Jesus says that Christ comes among us? In the meek and the lowly. It doesn't get any more least of these than trying to eat food next to a pig. It just doesn't get any lower than that. And if God comes to us in the form of Christ through the least of these, maybe that's the way we're supposed to see God in this story, is coming back as that younger son. And then it becomes our question, how are we going to break the social norms of our day? Are we going to run out and embrace that person? Are we going to stand off to the side and wait till it feels like we're the only one working and refuse to be in relationship? What norms are we going to have to let go of that we can welcome the prodigal? What parts of ourselves will we have to die to that we could embrace Christ? David Hinson again writes about it this way. In this parable, Jesus is asking us whether we'll entertain angels, even if the angels look to us like demons, like exactly what we fear and loathe. He's asking us whether we can overcome our prejudice and the oppression of religiosity to open our arms enough to embrace the other who is actually our closest kin. Jesus once said that if we have seen the thirsty, the oppressed, the imprisoned, the lame, the blind, the abused, the neglected, then we have truly seen him. It's not some metaphorical carbon copy. We've seen Jesus in the midst of that least. So how will we respond? How will we prepare ourselves to embrace God as we move into Holy Week? How will the open ending of this story invite us to take a next step, to pull us into Holy Week? See, because the truth is that the people of Holy Week who were gathering back then, they're just like the people of this prodigal son story. They're me and they're you. They're people from their day. They are us in our day. And that is who God comes to save. God did not become human and dwell among us as Jesus to save some only like the perfect people who haven't made the mistakes or taken off and fallen in with the pigs. No, God came to save those folks. And God came to save as well the older brother who thinks he's got it all figured out, thinks he can separate from everyone else and make it his own. This Holy Week, may we take a step into this story and into God's story. Could we hold up these palms and shout just like the people did back then, not really even knowing what the heck it is we're even shouting for? We may be certain that Jesus is coming on that stallion, and we may be surprised that he's actually going to have to borrow a donkey to make his way into that space. This is not the kind of king that we've ever imagined, but we have an opportunity, if we gather here for a meal on Thursday, to remember the story of Jesus' Last Supper, and then to come on Friday to watch as the cock crows and just walk away. See, those people in that story, they are this people in our story. They're us. There is no separation. And we can be pretty certain about so many things. Perhaps it is this trust that God invites us to walk toward. Because the certainty of God's resurrection comes as we walk in with openness toward a God who calls us home, who welcomes us back into relationship. May the hope and the life of that resurrection Easter be found as we take the crazy, risky step of walking toward Friday into Sunday.
Will your grace run out if I let you down? 'Cause all I know is how to aside and make it beautiful, beautiful. Will you call me child when I tell you lies? 'Cause another, caught up in words are a savior and you take brokenness aside and make it beautiful, beautiful.